Today is July 24th, 1992. Yesterday I had a conversation with my supervisor, Professor Sutherland. She wasn't happy. She thinks my net is cast too wide, and there are no solid connections between my research leads. She thinks I'm wasting time that I should be spending writing. It's not a magnum opus, she says. Just get it over with. I can feel that I am onto something, but it's hard to explain. Perhaps she's right. I don't exactly have a solid hypothesis or even a hint of a theory that I'm trying to prove. It's more like I am just pulling on a thread and seeing where it leads me. Oh, my archival requests arrived yesterday. I found the names of the lead opera singers featured in the production. Looks like there was also a small women's choir involved. It's strange, though. The cast was mostly female, besides a few minor male roles. This is unusual. Operas tend to be more balanced, have a clearly established dramatic lead, and often a romantic interest. It looks like Mortus Messis had two female co-leads. Tamara Corelli, a soprano, and Dahlia Fleming, a mezzo. And no, it doesn't look like they played romantic partners. I tried to dig up as much as I could about the singers, and this is so bizarre. It looks like neither one of them got far in their opera careers. Dahlia Fleming played one more role after Mortus Messis. It was the part of Amneris in Verdi's Aida. As for Tamara, she stopped performing and focused mostly on teaching. Not very long after, Tamara disappeared from the public eye. There's no records of any of her performances or teaching activities 2 years after the premiere. Gathering from the reviews, Dahlia was impressively talented. Many critics praised her versatile use of singing techniques, vocal range, and dramatic interpretations. Her repertoire spanned from classical opera seria, or serious style of Italian opera, to the bel canto operas of Bellini and Rossini. Her musical and dramatic talents earned her the status of Toccata del Divino, or Touched by the Divine. Dahlia's voice is described as having a rich, bold, bronze timbre to it. Side note, these singing metaphors are ridiculous, but it's an opera thing. Fuller and lower female voices are said to have gold or bronze timbre, and lighter female voices are described as silver. It likely wasn't easy for Oostman to solicit Dahlia for Mortus Messis. She was a promising rising star with ties to the Metropolitan Opera Company. For some strange reason, she accepted the role. There's less known about Tamara Corelli. During her career, she played some iconic soprano roles like Ophelia in Thomas's Hamlet and Violetta in Verdi's La Traviata. She had no ties to the international opera scene. For Tamara, this was likely a career-launching role. Why did she stop performing? As for the rest of the cast, this is where the trail goes cold. That is, of course, if we discard the bizarre accounts of the dancing, singing demons. I am convinced there must have been other staff besides the lead divas. I just can't find anything about them in the archives. Maybe I'm looking for the wrong things. When it comes to the aforementioned dancing and singing demons, though, this one eyewitness statement is a spine-chilling, gut-twisting work of art. The statement was written by William Johansson shortly after the premiere in 1916. As I took my seat in the Blackwater Opera House on that fateful evening in 1916, I was filled with a sense of anticipation and curiosity. Usman's Mortus Messis promised to be unlike anything I have seen before, and the excitement of the crowd was palpable. The velvet curtains parted, revealing a stage bathed in an eerie dim light, accompanied by the swell of music. The unusual composition was a captivating atypical music structure played with exotic instrumentation. The first act started in a bohemian setting. The diva's voice was poignant and mournful. She sang of regret, betrayal, and confusion. The second act was truly haunting. The singers' voices were extraordinary, and their roles were a perfect match to their dramatic talents. Their masterful acting drew us all deeper into the performance. However, as the third act began, I started to notice something unsettling. One of the performers, a tall veiled figure with an unusually elongated face, moved onto the stage with a grace that was almost too fluid, too perfect. As she opened her mouth to sing, a sound emerged that was both haunting and enchanting, unlike any human voice I had ever heard. I soon noticed that my heart began to race violently, seemingly without any provocation. The air suddenly felt dry and hot. I glanced around, wondering if anyone else had noticed, but the audience seemed enthralled. Their faces, a mask of fascination. My eyes were drawn back to the stage, where the figure was now joined by others, each more bizarre and grotesque than the last. Their features were twisted and distorted. Their eyes were glowing with an unnatural light, and their movements felt wrong. They danced in a way that seemed to mock human motion, their limbs bending and twisting in ways that should have been impossible. The fourth act took on a darker, more sinister tone. The harmonies were clashing and creating a dissonance that seemed to permeate every inch of my being. The inhuman voices mingled with those of the human performers, creating a cacophony that resonated deep within my bones, awakening some kind of ancient primal fear. I wanted to look away, but was held captive by the spectacle before me. As the opera reached its climax, the stage was filled with a grotesque ballet of horror. The veiled demonic dancers moved with a frenzy that bordered on madness, their voices rising to a deafening crescendo. I could feel the walls of the opera house closing in, the very air around me thick with an oppressive otherworldly presence. The audience erupted into applause, their face alight with admiration and wonder. This was how I realized that the performance had come to an end. I stumbled out of the opera house like a sleepwalker, my mind reeling, my heart pounding. I thought I was going insane. Sadly, a couple years later, Mr. Johansson did go insane. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia.